thanks to our sponsor, Raygun. Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy application experience for your customers? With Raygun Application Performance Monitoring, you have all the information you need at your fingertips to find and fix errors and performance problems across your tech stack down to the line of code. With Raygun, monitor the impact of your performance improvements, quickly identify and resolve issues, and see how your code performs in the hands of your customers, saving you time, money, and sanity. I've personally used Raygun and Hyperfish for the last 4 years to help me sleep better at night, knowing the customers we've worked so hard to get are having a great experience. We use Raygun to alert engineers proactively so that we can be the ones to tell customers when we've fixed the problem instead of them calling us to say something's wrong. Raygun.com is my secret weapon in shipping high-quality code. Check it out at Raygun.com and get up and running in minutes. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 379. Today, AC and I talk to Oracle Cloud VP Karan Batar, recorded live October the 1st, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you definitely should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new eSign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to sprint it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. Back to the show. AC, I see your typo in the notes, October the 1st, 2002, and I was having flashbacks.
I haven't really liked the way that 2020's gone, so I decided just that we can get a nice head start and let's try this again.
You want to rewind 18 years? It seems a little bit much.
No, there's some things I'd like to do over again.
Yeah, gotcha. Fair enough. How are you anyway?
Doing good, man. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. You know, we've been dealing with, you know, as you know, over the last couple of weeks, we've had smoke and all sorts of stuff. We've got elections going on. Like, we've got the pandemic. We've got all this stuff. The world is... Well, the US, I don't know about the whole world. Certainly lots of the world is pretty crazy and chaotic as well, but certainly here as well. And now I wake up this morning and we're all socked in. And the first thing I think of is, oh, gee, what is it now? And it's, you know, there's more smoke outside and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, seriously, 2020? Come on. Maybe we need to go back 18 years. Yeah.
Man, you just roll with it, right? It's just like, you know, you learned a lot, you know, whatever, you learn to just kind of roll with it and just kind of take the punches, it seems, this year. I mean, every year.
They say things comes in threes. They say it'll, you know, bad stuff comes in threes, which just seems like a bunch of voodoo to me. But like, so what do we had?
We got to be way past that, aren't we?
Surely. Like, we're up to like three or four dozen, surely.
I was about to say, that might get us through February or March. I mean, we're going way back. We almost went to war with Iran, then Kobe died. And it was like, I mean, come on, there's a lot.
Right. There's a lot that's happened. So. But anyway, yeah. So I've been chilling for the most part. Mm. Kids are back in school and things. And so getting a bunch of work done. And I'm sort of on the side. I'm learning about Gremlin databases with Cosmos at the moment, which has been really fun. We've been talking about that, and I've thoroughly enjoyed learning a bit of new tech and getting into that.
We've jumped on a couple of calls, and you've shared with me some of the stuff that you've been learning and what you've seen, and it has been, you know, it's one of those things that you hear people go crazy about. And one of the things I've talked to you about with this is that I hear about what graph databases are, and then the Cosmos DB guys made a big deal about that they support the Gremlin API, and I'm like, okay, so that's something apparently that's kind of big, because I don't know about this, but if you guys are adding it to Cosmos DB and you're making a big splash about it, then okay, there's a lot of smoke. Well, probably a bad analogy to use these days, but there's definitely fire, as we know, if there's a lot of smoke. So in some of the stuff you shared has been, I expected it to be wow, this is a new thing or this is a big deal. And what you shared is like, oh my God, this is so freaking cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I've been learning a bit of that and playing around. So it's always fun to learn something new while you're at it. But that's kind of been a bit of a side sort of project that I've been plugging away at when I get time and in the evenings and things. And
it's refreshing to learn something new.
Yeah. We'd have to maybe talk a little bit more about it on a show.
That's a great idea.
Databases and stuff. Now that you have a better understanding of it, I can come at it with the noob, because I still kind of am. I'm still messing up the terminology that you're using, but
vertices and edges, man. It's all about vertices and edges.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you? What's noodling in your world?
I've been living and writing a huge, well, I didn't think it was going to be huge, but it's turning into be quite a huge article series that I'm going to publish. Mm. I'll talk about it more in the next episode, because I think it'll start publishing next week, when the week that this show comes out. So it'll start coming out Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of the first full week of October. So I'll have an episode by the time the episode comes out that I want to talk about this a little bit. A couple articles already be out, but that's been what I've been focusing on a lot the last week. I'm somewhere around it's 6 or 7 parts, and I'm already up to 10,000 words, and I've only got 3 or 4 of the parts written. So
wow. Yeah, it's epic. That's going to be good. Any sort of teasers for the listeners on top rough topic?
It's something that it's about the SharePoint framework, and it is something that as somebody who speaks at conferences or has customers that ask certain questions and stuff, there's just some I guess you'd call it a back to basics. And there's questions that I seem to answer all the damn time.
Mm.
It's stuff that I've just wanted to go back and say, you know what? There's no definitive answer to this. And if I go look at the SharePoint framework docs on Microsoft, there's a little bit of it in there. And I think that this would be good for the SharePoint framework docs, but quite frankly, I want to have my opinions in there as well. So I don't think that that's good for technical docs. And I'm just taking the time to really write this up. And so I have a theme that I'm going with. I don't want to tip my hand to the theme just yet until it starts coming out, but I'm looking forward to it. And I'm also looking forward to telling a little story, a little tidbit that I asked you if I was okay, something that I learned a long time ago. And I was like, I heard this from somebody, and I want to make sure that somebody says it's okay for me to repeat this, because I haven't heard it from anybody else, and I know it's true, but is this okay to say? And thankfully you said yes.
Yeah, that was an interesting story, actually, and we won't spoil it for people, because we'll push. You should go read AC's series, and then once that article's out, maybe we could talk about it a little more, but it's kind of a little bit of the inside baseball story on how a particular thing happened, right? So, while I was at Microsoft and how it relates to some of those topics.
You're vested. you're all free and clear of your obligations when you're working there. So we'll talk about this a little bit more next week when we want to talk about the series, because by that time, the article that includes this little tidbit will already be out. So yeah, that's what I've been doing this week. How about yourself?
Well,
I guess Gremlin.
It's Gremlin. Yeah, bunch of work. I've got a few interesting sort of non-tech projects on at the moment that I've been focused on. So I'm not writing too much code at the moment, and noodling through those. But going into winter, I've been sort of mentally preparing myself for the gloom.
Winter's coming.
We get up here in Seattle. Yeah, winter really is coming, and we've got Canadians north of the wall, so it's it's getting serious.
I don't think they're coming down this time though.
No, hopefully not. Not with dragons, hope. Anyway, this week we've got a really interesting guest on the show, a chap called Karan Batar, who I met many years ago, when Karan had moved over from New Zealand as part of a company that he was working for at the time that we'll get into in the show a little bit. But now Karan is a VP of product at Oracle in Seattle. He's sort of local to where I live. And he's helping Oracle build their new Oracle Cloud products. I'd say product or products, right? It's something we know very little about, right? We've talked a little bit about Oracle in the past. And, I've always thought there's going to be something that Oracle does around its database in the cloud. And they've got a really they're in a unique position to offer, customers a pretty streamlined approach to their database offerings and getting them into the cloud. So, but I've never really delved into it at all. And it just sort of seemed to me like a really interesting topic. I'm sure there's lots of listeners out there whose companies have Oracle databases in their organization somewhere. And they're a relatively newcomer to the cloud, right? They're still sort of four or so years in. They're making leaps and bounds by the sounds of it. But I just thought we'd get Karan on the show to come and talk to us about what is Oracle doing in the cloud, sort of demystify a little bit of that, sort of shed some light on how they're approaching it and see if we can learn something. So yeah, he came on the show and didn't fail to deliver.
No, he didn't. And, you know, the timing was really interesting. You and I have talked about this, wanting to get him on the show for a while. And we actually had this scheduled a good bit ago, about a month or so ago, I think. And we did move it because of Ignite. But then all the news came out about Oracle Cloud and TikTok and all that stuff that came out in the last few weeks. Now, we didn't talk about that in the show because that's not what the show was all about. And it just, there's still a lot of stuff going on about that. So
yeah, still in progress.
Yeah, still in progress. So it wasn't really appropriate to talk about that in the show. But it was funny because like when the news came out about Oracle Cloud and TikTok, we had a couple people on Twitter and on Facebook like, Oracle has a cloud? And we're like, yeah, actually, it's kind of funny because the timing is you're going to learn more about that pretty soon. They're like, you guys should do a show on that. Like, we really should. But it was already scheduled.
That's a great idea.
It was already scheduled. But it was really interesting. I mean, you'll hear the interview, but to me, I found it really interesting. And I want to be careful how I say this because I don't want this to come across like anything. I don't want to come across like a slight or anything. But, you know, when you look at what Microsoft has done with Azure and AWS, and you look at what Google's done with the Google Cloud Platform, GCP, they're all kind of like a plus one, right? And so if someone is going to choose like one cloud over the other one, I mean, there are differentiators on each one of them, but it's almost like a dime a dozen kind of a thing. It's like going from a Ford to a Chevy to a Toyota. It's not like switching over and buying an electric car, right? It's something that's very different. And I found it really interesting, the approach that Oracle has taken. And it doesn't put them so much at being like an off-the-wall kind of cloud, but it's more or less like they take a different approach than the other three big guys take. And it fits very well into a lot of organizations. I mean, I found the way that they do like billing and the way that, you know, you don't have to deal with the whole IOPS thing or network throughput or something like that. It's just like, no, you get whatever the drive actually gives you with that whole bare metal thing, which will be, you'll get to hear it when we play the interview in just a second. But I found it to be, it was very interesting to hear how they approach it.
Yeah, I think for me, it's fascinating because everybody at Oracle Cloud has done it before. Mm. And well, everybody making the decisions and designing the stuff has done it before, right? Most of them have come from either Microsoft or AWS or Google. Mm. And you know, it's no secret that Oracle has been, over the last few years, has been just absolutely vacuuming up talent in the Seattle area for their cloud initiatives, and because it's based out of Seattle where Karan is. And all of those people get a do-over. They get to build another cloud, having learned all the mistakes from doing it in AWS and Google and Azure. Mm-hmm. And so that gives them a distinct advantage for doing things a little bit different and not just following each other. So I thought that was really fascinating. But that, you know, the discussion with Karan is really interesting. He's great, an interesting history with both Microsoft and through Green Button that was acquired by Microsoft many years ago, and his history from New Zealand. So it was great to sit down with him and talk through this stuff. So without further ado, should we run the interview and hear from Karan?
Let's go.
This episode is sponsored by AvPoint. If you like The Cloud Show, you will love the Shift Happens podcast with Microsoft MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation projects. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably arise when ambitious people try to impact their workplace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to www.avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag Shift Happens. That's one word, hashtag Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe today. This podcast is brought to you by ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admin control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations in a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit sharegate.com/overcast_CS. And we're back.
Karan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, CJ.
So, Karan,
good to talk to you again.
Yeah. Our history goes back a wee ways, but our listeners, you're a first-time caller to the show, so to speak. So why don't you spend a couple of minutes just giving them a little bit of background about your, what I would describe as really interesting kind of story of how you've come to work at Oracle and how we know each other.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, thanks for having me today. You know, I think it's been probably, I mean, it's been several years since we last talked, but also I think I've been here probably about 6 to 7 years in the US now. We had originally met back when I was at a startup called Green Button. That was kind of born out of the Lord of the Rings trilogies back in New Zealand. Our founder at the time, Scott Houston, essentially, there was no cloud computing at the time, right? It was grid computing, so to speak. It just changed names. And so he bought this data center off of Weta and turned it into like a New Zealand supercomputer center and hired a bunch of graduates, including me, and kind of built a company from the ground up. And yeah, I remember bunking in with your guys over here in Seattle. And yeah, once somebody saw value in the company and bought us, that was luckily Microsoft at the time. And you know, Microsoft said, "Hey, you can stay in New Zealand. You can come to the mothership here." And I decided that was probably the best from a career standpoint to make the journey over here. And I was at Microsoft for several years working on Azure, specifically their compute stack. Lots of hardware, lots of large distributed systems. And then, somebody gave me a phone call and said, "Hey, you should come to Oracle." And I said, "You're crazy." And however, the opportunity was something that I couldn't pass up, right? Essentially, the opportunity was where we're building a brand new cloud from the ground up. And think of this as a small group of people that are kind of learning from their mistakes, perhaps in the past, and have done it before. And, you know, if you were to do it all over again, how would you do it? How would you solve this problem differently? And so that was just too enticing not to take. And so, you know, it's probably been one of the best decisions of my career, I think. You know, the way I sort of think about it is there's probably only a couple of companies on the planet that can do something like this and force their way into the cloud market, you know, only in a span of, you know, 4 or 5 years. And, you know, Oracle was one of them. And so I decided to move over. I worked on sort of the compute stack as well, initially, the sort of the core compute stack for Oracle, which was at the time Bare Metal. It was called Bare Metal Cloud. You know, I joined when there was, you know, a couple of hundred people, and now we're, you know, tens of thousands of people. And, you know, over the course of time, I kind of like worked on everything and everything in Oracle, from instances to some database stuff to developer services to everything above. And, you know, now my team sort of manages and runs sort of solutions for VMware stack on Oracle, you know, high performance computing, which is kind of my bread and butter and always has been for the last sort of 10 plus years. Obviously, the compute stack, additionally, sort of traditional big data services like Hadoop or Spark or something else, and then also sort of cloud native developer services. And so that's kind of been my journey, and it's been a whirlwind. I mean, we've kind of done maybe like 10 years worth of work in like a span of like 4 years, and I think we'll be 4 years old at the end of this year.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you don't get many opportunities to do something again, build it again or better, right? Learn off your experience previous time and do it from scratch. I just got to apologize in advance. Somebody started jackhammering outside my house. So if you can hear that, that's what that noise is in the background. So apologies for that. But yeah, so Green Button, that's where it all really began for you, huh?
It was. I mean, funnily enough, even, you know, how things happen. In fact, I was on my way back from a music festival called Rhythm and Vines.
I know it well.
In New Zealand. And yep. It's formative years, obviously. And on my way back, I was kind of, you know, complaining about how the job market in New Zealand's terrible for IT folks. And there's only a few companies in New Zealand. And it's really, really tough because you end up just going to Australia at the end of the day, right? Trying to find a job. And so it just so happens that one of my buddies, who was a banker, said, "Oh, hey, give this guy a call." And, you know, that phone number was supposedly the CEO's phone number. And so I kind of persisted and emailed him and called him until he returned my phone calls. And he gave me a support job at the time. And, you know, I decided that, look, it's better to earn money than to get be in debt. So I decided to kind of, you know, convert my 4 or 5 year engineering degree into a 3 year Bachelor of Science, get some credits, and then move over and do Greenbot. And again, you know, just like kind of Oracle, right? I mean, it was probably one of the best decisions. If I wasn't in Greenbot, I wouldn't be here in the US, honestly. That crew, or that crew still as it exists, you know, in different parts, it's probably, I consider them like family. Almost.
Yeah, you've been through that shared experience, right? That was a hell of a ride for you guys. So yeah, so you've arrived at Oracle and you're building a new cloud. So what are you guys trying to achieve with this? Like, what is kind of the goal with Oracle Cloud? You're obviously, Oracle's historically been really strong with its database products, but what's it trying to do in the cloud and sort of to win over customers?
Yeah. I mean, I think at a sort of a 20-foot level, right? So today, what I would say is that Oracle is trying to be a general purpose cloud provider. That's our goal at the end of the day. And for us to be able to do that effectively, we have to make sure that we do a couple of things very, very right. One is we have to satisfy our customer base, and our customer base is entrenched in Oracle database, things like Exadata, which is a hardware appliance that we sell for our database, which is sort of like very, very finely tuned and optimized. It's all the middleware platform stuff like WebLogic and, you know, Java and things like that. So there's lots of things that our customers use that expect that same level of performance or price or enterprise grade. And so firstly, we had to make sure we build the cloud right for those guys. And, you know, those are the large enterprise customers that also have like an Office 365 agreement, right? So it's a very, very similar customer base from a Microsoft and Oracle perspective. When we initially started to build those things, we wanted to not just build a compute storage network database platform. We wanted to build things with a differentiating sort of thought process. So like as an example, with compute, we decided from early on that we wanted to do bare metal. Not just because it was cool or whatever, but like because it served a purpose, which is flexibility. You know, if you have an enterprise customer today and they come in and say, oh, I run like a 15-year-old OS, can I please run that on the cloud? Most cloud providers, it would say, yeah, sorry, you can't do that. Like, you're going to have to like go and move over to like this image that's in our marketplace or one of the listed images, right? Our answer is like, nope, that's cool. Bring it over. You can power virtualize it. Or if you wanted to come and run your own hypervisor, if you had a Hyper-V deployment or you had your own KVM deployment, or even now, if you had a VMware stack, awesome. You can just bring it over, stack it on top of the bare metal node, and you're good to go. What bare metal also allowed us to do was it allows us to sort of take all of the core sort of fundamental virtualization technology that we have and essentially take it outside the bare metal box, because we essentially provide the box as is. We don't run any software on it. So that means we have to run the virtualization, IO virtualization somewhere else. And that ends up being another piece of silicon. That provides a lot of security because essentially, you know, it's like a bare metal box that's provisioned just for you, but it has no implications on the actual, you know, overhead. And then finally, they had a side effect. Bare metal also is really good for performance. And so we get all these things kind of, you know, packed in one, but we did it for one reason. And then moving on to like storage as an example, you know, there's not a lot of differentiation in storage, so to speak. I mean, you have kind of the same technology, but we standardize on NVMe's like really, really far back, like 4 years ago, we just decided we're going to standardize on NVMe's. And then we said, okay, well, what else can we do? Okay, well, today, if you go to a traditional cloud provider, one of the incumbents, like, you know, you would pay for your storage and you'd pay for your provisioned IOPS or, you know, high performance SSDs. Well, okay, well, why do we just not give them the drive and then it just performs the way it performs? And so we ended up giving customers the ability to basically scale up to whatever storage they want. They pay for the storage itself, and then basically, theoretically, they get the maximum output from a performance standpoint. We don't artificially throttle them to say, oh, well, now like you get 5,000 IOPS, now you get 10,000 IOPS. You just get the maximum IOPS that the drive delivers you. We don't charge extra for it. Why would we?
Gotcha. So it's almost like
same thing with networking.
You've got a bunch of layers of cake, right? You're saying a bunch of the other providers provide tons of layers of the cake, but you're sort of abstracted away from the lower levels, right? And you guys offer the ability to sort of peel back some of those layers and really get down to the, you know, bare metal and sort of the raw components, if you will, of what it takes to build an infrastructure and build a cloud.
Absolutely. And additionally, honestly, we provide like bare metal is obviously sort of our, you know, our differentiator from the way it's designed to the way it's provisioned to, you know, to how it looks and feels to the user. But we also provide a VM service. I mean, we put our own KVM on top and provide VMs just like everybody else. But if it has to be the entire box, why not bare metal? Same thing with storage. We provide block, object, you kind of name it, and we have it. And, you know, but it's a differentiated, kind of like slightly different offering from the others. Same thing with networking. I mean, again, there's not much differentiation there, right? It's sort of like, oh, it's, you know, you've got a network connection and whatever. But, you know, we charge for the port, and then bandwidth is all you can eat. And so in some cases, from a business standpoint, you know, customers are basically like orders of magnitude savings. I mean, you've seen the Zoom story as an example. They're saving lots and lots of money just because they're not paying for egress, right? In the cases where we don't have a technology differentiator, we'll have a business model differentiator.
That makes sense. So you've talked about just sort of the bare metal aspects of things, and you do VMs. What other kinds of services do you provide, like, you know, that people could expect to see in sort of the menu to pick from, so to speak?
Yep. Over the last couple of years, right, I mean, our focus has been to build lots of data centers, because without region availability, like, you know, folks don't even want us on the, you know, don't even give us a seat at the table, right? And so we had to have a good sort of spread of those services. And in fact, I think only a couple of days ago, we just launched Dubai. It was the second region in Middle East after Jeddah. And now we have 26 regions globally.
Out of interest, are you guys building those? Like, are those new data centers that are going in, or are they sort of you're buying data centers in places and things like that?
Yeah, it's a mixture of both. In places where, you know, in places where we don't have like actual presence, like we would probably just go into a colo or something like that. But like, it's a mixture of both, essentially, depending on our presence, existing presence and sort of new presence, right? So 26 right now as we stand, and I think the stat is something like we've built a new region every 22 days. So one of the focus areas has been like automating deployments of our data centers, right? So after the data center, we started obviously building our core fundamental layer of services, compute, storage, network, database. And then on top of that, we have our sort of developer stack, which is kind of, you know, it would be expected of a cloud provider where you want to provision, orchestrate, do whatever. And so we've taken a different approach with that too. So like, rather than go and build our version of like Azure Resource Manager or our version of CloudFormation, what we've done is we've said, well, what's the, you know, we understand that most of our customers are going to be multi-cloud and maybe even hybrid in some cases. So what's sort of the, we've taken an open standards approach with all of our services essentially. And so, you know, we went work with HashiCorp as an example, and we basically took Terraform and made it into a first-class service on OCI. So you could take your scripts, your Terraform scripts from another provider, bring it over, change a couple of parameters, and we just ingest it like a normal service. It's recognized as a first-class citizen. Same thing with streaming. It's Kafka compatible. Our storage, as an example, is S3 compatible. Same thing with Kubernetes. We don't take a fork and then like go and do some stuff and then never push it back. We always just take the upstream Kubernetes build. Same thing with functions. Like, you know, it's funny because people are like, well, Oracle means like lock-in. Well, you know, okay, well, I mean, look at our function service as an example. It's based off of FN, Project FN, which is an open source functions project. And we basically just deploy that as a service. You could literally take that and deploy it in Azure or AWS if you wanted to. You couldn't do it the other way around, right? So we've taken an open standards approach, and we have all the services you would expect, like, you know, DNS, CDN, developer services, orchestration, streaming, notifications, monitoring, observability, kind of the whole nine yards. I think the next generation of services that we're looking into are now the value-added services that we would be doing, right? So like specific use cases. So like we've invested in HPC a lot. So we have specific like kind of feature sets for HPC as an example. Or, you know, we're looking into sort of like...
Will it run flight sim? That's the big question. Because the big thing on the internet right now is, you know, flight sim is like the biggest GPU hog on the planet. And so, you know, I'm just being facetious, but...
No, honestly, it will. It probably will, because here's the funny thing, right? You know, lots of people ask us, right? Oh, how do you compete against the providers? How do you compete against them? Well, we don't. Our intention is not to just like directly compete against like the Azures and the AWSs of the world. Our intention is to compete. Look, infrastructure is not solved yet. Like most people are like, oh, infrastructure is done. It's commodity. It's like good to go. Like AWS and Azure won that battle. It's not really the case, because if that was truly the case, everybody would have already moved to the cloud, and that's not the case today, right? So probably I would say in the high 90 percentage points, people are still on-prem. So the way we actually compete with the providers is by actually solving things that our on-prem customers want. That's how we compete against them. We don't directly just go and say, well, they have that, so we should have this. No, no. Let's go to talk to our customers. They want these things, and that's what we're going to go do. So traditionally, what's ended up happening is we end up solving problems that others haven't solved or are underserved by them. So from that perspective, yeah, I mean, like when we designed our GPU box, I mean, we just recently announced our new GPU box. It's like 8 A100 GPUs. Yeah, I mean, everybody else on the planet's going to have them too. But the way we designed the box is very, very different. We looked at an on-prem customer that's going to buy a DGX system from NVIDIA and said, okay, well, what is it that you want? So we made decisions like, oh, like instead of 1 terabyte, we're going to give you 2 terabytes of memory. Well, not just because we can, but because, you know, our retail customers run LAD, large graph processing workloads. Then we said, okay, well, we're going to put a X amount load of, you know, NVMe drives in there, not just because we can, but because our oil and gas customers run seismic processing and they need tons of storage on the box because of latency. So we made like decisions based off of that rather than like, no, let's build the biggest, baddest box we can. So in some cases, we have less cores. Like in cloud, you'll see everybody going dense and dense and dense, more and more cores. We went the other way, not because like we were trying to do something different, but because our customers said, we want this. Right. And so that's how we kind of like look at designing our stuff.
So one of the,
but yes, it can definitely run flight sim.
Back to the important thing, right, TJ?
I'm sold.
So it sounds like, I mean, the more that I hear you talking about this, it sounds like what you just said, you know, you're not trying to compete on a feature for feature, the same kind of an offering that the Azure's, the AWS's, the GCPs are going to offer. Rather, and not so much, I don't know if this is a fair, the way you guys would look at it. But what I'm hearing is that it's, you know, we decided to go a different approach instead of just jumping into the exact same market that everybody else is going with it and just trying to be, you know, a plus one to those other public cloud offerings. We're taking we have a different approach. Specific, I mean, the bare metal piece was a very, very different approach than the other guys are doing. But that's also a very unique offering that you can go to someone, like you're saying, the oil and gas, where they really want that bare metal because they want all their data on the same box. And it's just not the same when you're trying, when everything's all virtualized, but being able to have access to that bare metal really puts you guys in a unique position. Is that more fair to where?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think it's a philosophical difference, right? We just have a different approach and we think about it differently. Like as an example, everybody says lift and shift, right? It's like, oh, lift and shift your workload, lift and shift your workload. But truly, true lift and shift hasn't really happened because, oh, by the way, you're going to have to like redo your image. Oh, by the way, you should really use Kubernetes for this. Oh, everything should be containerized or something like that, right? Like, it's like, yes, lift and shift, but you have to do these 500 other things. We have sort of a different mantra at Oracle. We say move and improve, which is, you know, essentially literally do nothing, but like move your thing into our cloud and it will just work. Yes, there you may have to take some, if you power virtualize your 10-year-old OS, it may not run as good as it runs on-prem. Right, as an example. So yeah, just move exactly the thing that you have on-prem and it just run it on our cloud. And then you can improve components of that as you get comfortable. So cool, if you wanted to containerize something or if you wanted to make, you know, you could blow it up and you could, you know, do microservices or something like that. You could do anything you like, but we are trying to make your journey into the cloud first very, very simple because the inherent value of the cloud is like, I want to do pay-per-use and I want to be able to do scale up and scale down and I want to be able to offset my CapEx. Those three you can do without changing a single thing from your architectural standpoint. So that's how we think about it because a lot of our customers, yes, they're doing things in the cloud, but traditional core fundamental systems, like I'll give you an example. We have a customer in Japan called NRI. They're the largest financial services provider in Japan. Basically, I think it's like 50 to 70% of the Nikkei index transactions go through their building, right? They ran on-prem. Yeah, I mean, they were doing things on other cloud providers like chatbots or like some, you know, some R&D thing. But core banking systems that runs like literally their business like was just being on-prem forever. And so now they recently announced that they're going to be moving to Oracle Cloud all in, essentially. And not because like we, you know, you know, did something special, but we just thought about like, can we just give you the benefits of cloud without giving you the downsides of the cloud, where you have to kind of like readjust to go to the cloud? And that worked out pretty well. And that's been kind of like the story for us. And look, you know, like if you're a born in the cloud company, you probably think about AWS or some of the others first, right? Because, yeah, I mean, like, you know, you don't have to build your systems from the ground up. But, you know, for true enterprise customers, this is sort of the right way that they want to do things. And, you know, I mean, that's not to say that we don't have those kinds of other customers, but I would say sort of our core fundamental base is that enterprise.
It makes perfect sense. There are a lot of Oracle databases out there, right? Like that should mm-hmm. be no surprise to anybody. So you're saying, is there a sort of an easy mode, right, for those customers to take what is pretty complicated on-prem software and sophisticated needs, right, on-prem, and just literally be able to say, cool, we no longer want to replace hardware. We no longer want to be able have to provide our own data center or high security facilities and all that sort of stuff, and literally just stop that part of their business and move it to Oracle Cloud. Is there kind of an easy path for those customers who are probably listening to the show going, oh yeah, we use Oracle databases all over the place. Maybe this is the time that we can look at getting those things to the cloud finally.
Yeah, definitely. I think, look, you know, I made a comment earlier, right, where I said that, you know, our customer base is very entrenched in sort of like enterprise, and we share a lot of that customer base with Microsoft, right? So, which is one of the reasons why we did a partnership with Microsoft, if you haven't heard. So the partnership basically allows us to be a single, essentially it allows customers to run or be truly multi-cloud. So you could have your Active Directory federated, and you can then just basically log it, do a single sign-on, and you're in both Oracle Cloud and Azure. And in most cases, we are basically around the corner or perhaps even in the same building with Azure. And so we basically have a direct connect with them. And in hubs of presence, you could run, you know, what that ends up meaning for large enterprise customers, they don't have to pick one or the other. They do what makes sense for them in Azure, then they do what makes sense for them in Oracle. So let's say you wanted to run your database tier in Oracle Cloud, great, you can do that. You don't have to just migrate everything to Oracle. And then if you wanted to run the app tier in Azure, you can do that too. And the performance is going to be just like it's like one region, but you're on two different clouds. Obviously, commercially, customers will have an enterprise agreement there and an enterprise agreement here. But from a technology standpoint, we made it super simple. And there's no data movement, you know, charges. Like you can just use it like one cloud, essentially. And so we've done things where it makes it very, very easy for a customer to make a decision where they're like, okay, I don't have to go all in on one cloud and then try to decide my DR or like my second cloud strategy. It's like, no, like it's all good. Like you're probably a Microsoft customer as well, and you're probably running some stuff there. Why don't we just like make an architecture which makes sense for you to run things in Oracle, which we're good at, like databases and bare metal or like GPU, whatever, right? And then the things that are like very, very inherent to your Microsoft workloads, you can run it there. And then it's your choice, right? At that point, it becomes a cool, like I can run a VM here, or I can run a VM here, and maybe it's cheaper here, and maybe you move that VM here. It's just as simple as a click, essentially, right?
Yeah, you take all the friction away from those decisions, right?
Exactly. And it's, oh, and by the way, with all of our developer services, you only write code once. Like you can deploy using Terraform and Azure just the same way you can deploy in Oracle. So it makes it super simple for them to be truly multi-cloud. That's one portion of it. And then the second portion of it, we're investing in a lot of things like, you know, migration tools and sort of like easy things with databases. As an example, you know, we have one database service, right? We don't have like 50 database services, and everything is like from, you know, from document to slice bread to like, you know, everything in between. Like we don't have 60 different services. We have one service, but it can be sliced and diced in like those 60 different use cases. So you can run it on a VM. We could do it managed, or you could do it serverless. You could put it on a crappy one core VM, or you could go all the way up to like a full blown, like super expensive Exadata machine. So, but it's a single API, it's a single mechanism. You know, you don't have to kind of like go and like integrate into 50 different APIs. So yeah, I mean, for Oracle customers, it's like a no brainer. But it really becomes, you know, sort of like a much easier decision for them if the customer is entrenched in multiple different technologies and they want to be multi-cloud. And most customers at this point they want to be multi-cloud. If anybody says otherwise to you, it's probably BS.
Fair enough too. So I guess, you know, for those listening, you know, Oracle, they're probably thinking, hey, Oracle's a pretty old company now, right? It's been around for decades and decades, and there's been this sort of fierce battles with Microsoft in the past and Larry versus Bill and all that sort of stuff. And as you say, Oracle's history is very heavy on enterprise, right? And so, and especially an on-prem enterprise. So I guess talk to us a little bit about this transformation of Oracle as a company, because you know, when you joined, the cloud division, is that the right word, was only just sort of forming. And so that's really new muscle for Oracle, right? Is building out this new way of, I don't know, building and shipping software and infrastructure and all that sort of stuff. So I bet that's been a real kind of cultural change inside the company as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would say is, you know, I didn't think I thought that in my lifetime I would see Larry stand up and talk about Microsoft and talk about VMware as an example. We have a marketplace where we sell other people's IP, like stuff like that, right? So I think from a perspective of culture, that it starts from the top, right? So I mean, we're kind of all in on the cloud, right? We used to be a database company. We're still a database company, but we're pivoting to be a large platform cloud provider, right? And that change has been sort of like across the entire company. So, you know, things like everybody is now standardized even internally on OCI. So like our SaaS platform or other, you know, internal services and things like that. So we eat our own dog food as well. So everybody is just kind of pivoted and like, you know, it's a large ship. It's just like, you know, what Microsoft was when I joined, when the Satya sort of changeover was happening, right? And they were like the Windows company, but then they turned to be like cloud first, mobile first, right? That was the tagline. And so the same kind of change is happening. The only difference being is that it's happening in such a short time span. Like, you know, Microsoft maybe took like, you know, 7 to 10 years to do that change back when I was there anyway. You know, here it's kind of like I was here, I joined like 3.5-4 years ago, and now we're here. And it's like, it's compressed into a very, very short timeline. So that means, you know, we've got tons of talent that essentially has done this before. Like I would say it's a very high percentage of people that have, you know, either been at one of the three other cloud providers. And so we've just kind of exploded from a talent, from people, from regions, from services. It's just been, you know, if you look at Gartner, right, as an example, 4 years ago, like we weren't on the map. 3 years ago, people were like, oh, you have a cloud. Like, okay, cool, whatever. 2 years ago, people were like, oh, you have a cloud. I use it. It's good for Oracle stuff. And then like a year ago, it's kind of like, oh, you have a cloud. Tell me more. And then now it's sort of like, okay, we now get a seat at the table of like customers actually saying, I remember you have a cloud. I do want to check you out as well as the other cloud providers. And so we're getting into those conversations now. And, you know, like 4 years ago, we didn't exist, right? So it's sort of like from 0 to 100 in like almost no time.
That's a huge effort to pull off in any case, right? In sort of any endeavor, but to turn a very large ship on, even in a 4 year period, not around, but you know, in the right direction for a new strategy is a great thing to have pulled off. And so that's really good to see.
I mean, it's certainly vindicating for me, yeah, right? I mean, because when I left, the amount of flack I got for joining Oracle was immense. It was like,
sure.
It was crazy because just how like the market is, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of vindicating to see like how things have changed over time. And of course it's going to take even more time, but it's good to see the market picking it up now.
We need more players to keep AWS and Microsoft in check, right? It's always good to have more competition. So
and a different style offering too. I mean, that's not something that is like just another mousetrap. I mean, it's a different offering. It's not the exact same thing that everybody else is offering. So it's definitely curious.
I have a question. So if I wanted to go dabble with some of your cloud services, is that something I can do? Is just sort of Joe Schmo on the street? Can I just go sign up and swipe a credit card and start playing with some bare metal or some VMs, or do I have to go talk to an Oracle account manager?
No, you have to sign a massive contract, sign some support, and you know what you can do? You can actually go to oracle.com/free, and basically you can sign up to a free account. And last year, in fact, and again, you know, this is kind of like the big cultural change from being a traditional software provider to being a services provider, and is we have always free services. Yes, we have a free tier where you can get, you know, a couple of $100 of credit and you can try some stuff out. But we also have a tier of always free services on Oracle Cloud where you can, you know, you get a couple of cores and you get, you know, a load balancer and you get some storage and you can go build an app if you want to, and you can run it forever for free. So you can absolutely go and sign up. You know, you don't need a credit card. You just go and sign up. And, but if you do put a credit card, we'll probably just like max it out or something.
I will when I try to run flight sim, that's for sure. Okay.
But no, you can absolutely do that. Oracle.com/free.
That's a pretty good free tier too. Two autonomous databases, 20 gigs for each one, compute VMs, 100 gigabyte blocks, yep, and 10 gigabytes object storage. That's not exactly like a little hobbyist kind of a thing. You, yep, can actually do some real stuff with that.
I mean, we have probably hundreds of thousands of people already doing it today, you know, and part portion of them are the next generation developers, mm-hmm, right? We're trying to seed the next generation developers that need to learn Oracle database technology, or next generation developers doing Java, or the next generation, or even people that just haven't done anything but AWS for their, you know, for the last 10 years, mm, or the last decade. They can just go and play around and run some stuff and truly just compare and contrast. Right.
Nice. So oracle.com/free, that's the place to get started. Where's a good place for people to learn, like off that location? Can they go find out like docs and stuff on what services you provide, yeah, and more info? Is that the best place to start?
Yes, that is the best place to start. And as soon as you join in, and you go into your portal, so to speak, you're in our version of the cloud portal, mm-hmm, there'll be like a bunch of like quick start guides. So like you can say how to launch a VM, and you like, essentially we've got pre-built-in scripts and things. You know, we obviously have a GitHub page where you can go and like, you know, download a bunch of like sort of automation scripts, workloads, like things like that. So we have tons of documentation. There's obviously no shortage of documentation, but the best way to do it is go into the, you know, and onto the website, sign up, get a free account, and then as soon as you log in, you'll get like a sort of a home page and it'll have a bunch of links and things.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show.
So, moving right along, before we wrap up, we like to ask all of our guests for a pick of what they found interesting recently, maybe a book you've read, a movie, or a gadget or gizmo, or even just an article that you've read. So I forewarned you, but what are you finding interesting these days? What's been on your mind?
Well, you know, since you're home all the time, I've kind of got back into video games lately. Mm. You know, obviously, you talked about Microsoft Sim,
Flight
right?
Sim. Yeah.
Flight Sim. I've been kind of in the Call of Duty Warzone, mm-hmm, sort of type of stuff, but kind of quick games here and there. But I wanted to get into the next gen stuff, you know, the PS5 and the Xbox One X. And
gotcha.
I was like, you know, I had my alarm on. I was going to get up in the morning and I was going to go like order some stuff. And basically PS5, no chance. It was a complete disaster. And I signed up like 15 different places and I got nothing,
wow,
anywhere. The websites were crashing and I'm like, cool, are you built on the cloud for scalability? Like,
there's a new customer.
Like, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's, you know, it's a world we live in where like, I'm literally like, here's my money. I want to buy your thing. And it's like, sorry, 404 or something,
yep,
like that. And you know, people's carts are disappearing. And like, so, I mean, just with that, like the e-commerce system just like completely like buckled under that pressure.
It seems so
strange.
And
I don't think,
I mean, like today when, yeah, we've effectively got limitless computing at our fingertips.
I don't understand. Like same thing. So I was like, okay, I gave up on the Sony PlayStation thing. I was like, I'm going to be like on point for like, literally I'll have like five browsers open, my phone, my tablet and everything. And I'll try to get the Xbox, right? And it was like 8 a.m. Pacific time. Mm-hmm. I literally had to like refresh like all of my browsers and screens until like, because I would get to a stage where it's like in the cart and then the cart would just like blow up. And just,
wow.
Or I would get to the stage of like putting in my, like in some cases I would be too slow putting in my credit card details. And by the time I click purchase, like gone. And so either something is like gone. And even Microsoft's website was like just, like,
wow,
you know, beach balling me essentially,
wow,
right? So it was like, I think after like 15 solid minutes of frustration, somebody posted on Twitter, go to this link, which was rather than going to the Microsoft store directly from the Microsoft website, I had to go through the Xbox website, mm, which is a different interface, but it's like, it's the same backend or something. Huh. And like, I don't know, clickety click. I got the thing eventually, but it was like Twitter was amazing after that because everybody was just like, you know, posting GIFs,
yeah,
and their experiences.
The memes.
But that just makes me kind of like realize like how does this e-commerce system work? I mean, it's okay to say like you're out of stock, but it's not okay to like kind of get you to a point, refresh you, you got to start all over again, or just throw up a 404
yeah.
or something like that. GameStop did something where like if you go to their website, they like it's almost like they consider like a DDoS attack. And so they basically threw you up on a page and said, you are in line. Do not refresh this
right,
page.
Right.
And you can't even get to the website. And so if you refresh, you apparently get back in line. And then, you know, like 40 minutes later, they let you into the website. There must be a better way to do this because console generations don't happen like, you know, every year. They're like 75, 70 years apart.
Well, it sounds like both Sony and Microsoft could do with some of your Oracle Cloud Bare Metal.
Come over.
That's right.
This is funny you say this. I don't know if you guys have seen that. I saw the meme come out last week. I was getting a little confused by this. I mean, I'm an Xbox guy, and I don't have the latest Xbox, but was curious about getting the next one that came out. And somebody put this meme out. I was looking at the names. I'm like, I'm getting confused on all the different names of different Xbox. And they have on one column, I'll put this in the chat for you guys. They have one column, they have, here's all the different Xboxes. And then they put the Xboxes in boxes, like that they come in. So it's like, here's the original one Xbox, but it also here's the one Xbox box. Here's the one Xbox One, but then here's a one Xbox One box. And then we've worked our way all the way up to the one Xbox One X, but then there's one in a box. And then there's the one Xbox Series X in a one Xbox Series X box. But if you get a bunch of them, it's a one series of Xbox Series X boxes.
It's like a Dr. Seuss tongue twister.
It's funny you mentioned that. So on Twitter, one of the things that I found hilarious, in fact, I had to go back and check my order, was in Amazon, they said that the new one is called Xbox Series X.
Yeah.
And then the old one, well, I mean, the latest one as it exists today is called Xbox One X.
Right.
And so apparently in Amazon, Xbox One X had a 750% jump in sales on that day. So people are like, I want to buy the new
people
thing.
People buying the
and
old
then,
thing.
Like, they bought the old, buying the old thing. And like they find out later, like, you know, hours later that they bought the other thing, the old one.
Oh, man.
And people are just, you know, people are blowing up on Twitter and, you know, inherently buying the wrong thing. So I had to go back and double check to make sure I bought the right one. And so that's hilarious. I mean, that's a stroke of genius on the Microsoft side where they named it in such a way where, you know.
Microsoft marketing isn't known for their extreme tact, right? I mean, just like they nail it. But I had a friend that was doing the same thing. And it's like, which Xbox did you get? And he's like, I had to be really careful to get the tall cube, not the one that looks like somebody stepped on. I'm like, yeah,
that
apparently
would be,
that's the important part. You want the one that goes straight up.
Just call it the tall cube. Xbox tall cube. Yeah.
Or actually, if you flip it to the side, it looks like a firewood log. Yeah. Like, you know.
It does, doesn't it? Oh, that's a keeper. All right. So, AC, what have you got for us this week?
I'm going to go on my spacey kind of theme here. Even got my spacey Bob and Doug mission shirt on today
as
well.
Nice work.
So, I've been watching this over the last couple months. I keep meaning to use this as a pick, and then when I go to use it as a pick, I find that, my pick is now like 3 months old. Well, last week, or September the 30th, they came out with another update to it. They actually have a bit of a resolution. So on board the ISS, they've actually been fighting an air leak for the last couple months, almost year. And they haven't been able to figure out. It's tiny. It's never put the astronauts in danger. But it's one that they've always been like, we're not really sure, where this thing is. And just this past week, they were finally able to figure out that it's coming from one of the Russian modules. And that they've been able to figure out, too, that they can attribute it to a temporary temperature change on board the station. And when that happens, they've been able to see that that's when the rate of the leak is actually changed. But they can figure out, okay, we know it's coming from this module now. We just haven't been able to figure out where it's coming from. When I first saw this, or I remember, when I first saw the news of this months ago, my original reaction was, there's an air leak on ISS. That seems like epic. Like, that seems like a really big deal. But apparently, it's not a very big deal. Like, this is something that they're fairly accustomed to, that it's like, air leaks come up from time to time. They're never really a big deal, but it's something that you just want to take care of. It's kind of like that drip under the sink. Like, you don't want to leave that, but it's not one of those things you need to stop having dinner for, or you need to cancel your out-of-town trip to go through and fix it right now. So I thought it was a bigger deal. They were like, it's not that big of a deal. Like going, hey, we found it. Like, Now it sounds like a big deal the way you're acting about it. So
weirdly,
it is the space.
On this topic, last week I had a Zoom call with the International Space Station pilot, who's not an astronaut, but she runs the guidance and attitude control for ISS from Mission Control in Houston. And we talked about this exact topic. And it was interesting because somebody brought up politics in space and who was on the call and said, how do you guys work out political differences between the US and Russia as it relates to ISS? And the leak came up as part of that. And apparently there's a debate going on at the moment about how to deal with the leak because they want to cut off all the different segments of ISS, close all the hatches to find which segment it's in. And so there's all this sort of political wrangling that has to go on to arrange for this because all the astronauts have to be, astronauts and cosmonauts, have to be in their own relevant areas of the station so that they can escape in their own spacecraft if they need to. Mm-hmm. And so there's all these budgetary decisions and political wrangling that needs to happen to make all this happen. And I just thought it was really interesting. But yeah, they still haven't found that. But they're trying, apparently.
Yeah, they've narrowed it down. They know it's in a Russian, in a Russian module. But yeah, that's as far as they've gotten. So yeah. How about you? What you got for us?
Okay, so this week saw a interesting leak of source code for Windows XP. I don't know if you've seen this news, but somebody has, effectively leaked the source for XP, and you get to go pick through it and see all the interesting, you know, developer comments on various patches, like them swearing at various video card manufacturers and so forth for these wonky workarounds they're having to make and all this sort of stuff. Also, the interesting things, like there are interesting things in there, like finding out how they patched things like the WannaCry attack or a bug that, you know, that plagued Microsoft many, many years ago. And so it's just an interesting, so if you're into this sort of stuff and you want to go take a look, you could start go having a look through XP's source code now.
At least it was in Windows Vista League.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, XP would have been, I mean, there's still people running XP. Do you ever go into those airports and seeing like the little green start blob down in the bottom left-hand corner and go, oh my God, they're running XP.
I had a hearing test yesterday, and sure enough, the machine they were using to measure everything had that blue bar going down the left-hand side for like the task section. Looked over, I'm like, oh my God, you're using XP. And of course, she clicked on one or two things and then turned around and kept dealing with me. And next thing I know, like about 45 seconds later, like an app opened up. Like, I want to upgrade that machine.
There's a great video online of a guy who started with Windows 1, I think, and does an upgrade, like an in-place upgrade of that machine all the way through to Windows 10.
And you can do that?
You can do that. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy, huh?
That's crazy.
Does he have all the floppies?
that's a lot of floppy disks for Windows 10. Yeah.
I mean, I'd imagine, source code isn't necessarily accessible even broadly within Microsoft, right?
No. So XP they share with some partners and like the US government, for example, and things like that. So the theory goes that somebody in one of those source code sharing programs has ended up leaking it. Either by accident or on purpose somehow. Never mind. All right, well, Karan, we really appreciate you coming on the show and talking to us about Oracle. We're complete Oracle noobs, as you know, and so this was as much about us as it was about our listeners learning something about Oracle Cloud. So, yeah, like I said, we really appreciate you coming on the show and talking to us for a little bit about that.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great to see you sporting Kiwi Heritage All Blacks shirt. Go the mighty ABs. Oh, we're going to put down a haka online. Gotcha. Nice. Let's
do it. The Bledisloe Cup is on its way, right? So we're going to be watching that.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope they do well. But yeah, thanks again for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it. And we will look forward to seeing what happens with Oracle Cloud in the future.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app. It helps people find out about our show and grow our audience, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play it on the show. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll get notices of each episode as well as the show notes sent to you directly each week. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.